This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Don Stewart, Washington attorney and Stewart Consulting Principal. From 2000 to 2011, Don served as the Pacific Northwest Regional Director for the American Farmland Trust. Before that, he was Executive Director for the Washington Association of Conservation Districts. Don Stewart is here today to tell us about his book, Barnyards and Birkenstocks, Why Farmers and Environmentalists Need Each Other, published in 2014. Welcome, Don.
Glad to be here.
What was your reason for writing Barnyards and Birkenstocks?
Well, I guess it arose out of some experiences I had early on that led me to get very frustrated with the ongoing conflict between farmers and environmentalists. It seemed very pointless and counterproductive.
Would you remind us of the extent to which farmland is being lost and why this is happening?
I think it's close to 20,000 acres, 23,000 acres a year, something like that, across the country. It's happening very dramatically, and of course it happens in the areas closest to our urban areas, but it also happens much more broadly than that, more broadly than many of us might think. And it frequently happens in areas where we really can ill afford the loss.
What are the key environmental impacts of farming?
Well, they are many, both impacts negative and positive. Agriculture, clearly there are risks for water quality. Farms can pollute. Runoff from farm fields carries sediment and pesticides and other nutrients that can be damaging to water quality. You definitely have wildlife habitat problems, issues happening all over the country. Here in the Northwest, maybe the most common example is impacts on salmon. There are impacts on air quality and specifically on climate. And in all of those cases, there are things that farmers can do about it, and there are things that farms can do above and beyond to actually mitigate for some of the impacts that the rest of us are having on those same issues. So it's definitely both positive and negative, and something can be done about all of it.
Would you say more about how farms can help the environment?
Well, think about it. Farms represent, in the U.S. at least, half the land base. Farmers farm half our total land base. They use something like 80% of the water. And if you believe, as I do, that in order for humans to continue to exist on the planet, we really need a sustainable, clean, healthy environment, but at the same time, we also need our farms. So our farms and our environment are inevitably going to have an impact on one another. Their relationship is built into how things are. And if we're going to have both farms and a clean environment, they're going to have to coexist on the same landscapes, side by side, even merged with farm and environmental values being produced on the very same land. But it's clear to me, it's been clear for a very long time, that first of all, if you lose your farm, if a farm goes away, the odds are very good that what replaces it is not going to be native forest, right? What takes the place of a lost farm, of a farm that goes out of business, is probably something much more intensive in the way of a land use than was the farm. So you've suffered an environmental loss just by virtue of losing the farm. But above and beyond that, farmers can use a whole wide variety of conservation practices in farming that can be very beneficial to the environment. They can grow habitat along the borders and in corners of their fields and in places that are not particularly farmable. They can improve wetlands in areas on their farm that are not productive. They can plant cover crops that provide habitat and feed for birds and wildlife. I could go on and on. There are many, many things they can do with respect to all of those issues of water quality, habitat, air quality, all of the environmental concerns. Some of those you could look at as things that they probably should do, just as good citizens. But many of those things that they could do are also things that are definitely kind of over and above, ways in which they could provide what you think of maybe as environmental lift, actually improving the environment, something that's very hard to achieve in other parts of the land surface.
What forces work against farmers being involved in environmental protection?
Economics, of course, is a big one. Keep in mind, farms are very diverse, very different. There are 2 million farmers in this country. It's not a monolithic industry, the food production industry, is. But agriculture itself is definitely composed of many, many, many small farms, not nearly as corporate as many people feel. So they're in an economic fight. They're in one of the most bitterly competitive industries on the planet. And it's very hard for them to be able to afford to do things that really don't serve the bottom line. So that's a struggle for our farmers. And then I might add one other thing that makes it very difficult. And that is that most, I think I'm safe in saying, most of the things that a farmer would do to improve the environment are things that you might refer to as fixtures to the land. They're things that they're doing to the land that probably are continuing or ongoing that involve some kind of an investment. When land becomes vulnerable to development, when farmland acquires a market value that is actually higher than its value as a farm business asset, the farmer knows that the next time he sells that land, it's not going to sell to another farmer. At that point, when the farmer realizes that the land is worth more for something other than agriculture, then suddenly making investments in improving the land for the long-term values of both farming and the environment becomes incredibly more difficult. And I could give you examples. Just one example that's always appeals to me is the example of an irrigation system. For thousands of years, farmers have used what's called furrow and rill irrigation, where they basically flood a field. The water runs slowly down furrows across the field between the rows of plants, and that's how they irrigate. When the water gets to the bottom, the lower end of the field, it's gravity fed, and then it runs off, goes back into the water system, right? Well, you can imagine, and correctly so, that that water that comes off that field is going to have sediment in it. Sediment's going to have nutrients and pesticides and other things attached to it. If you could put a sprinkle system in there, you'd improve water quality, you'd reduce the amount of water that was used. It'd be much, much better for the environment. So you put a nice high-efficiency irrigation system in there that costs, who knows, $100,000? That's a big investment. If you do that, it might be a good thing economically for the farmer. A farmer might save on water cost and on energy cost, might save on labor cost, might be able to apply fewer chemicals and less fertilizer, get it targeted exactly where it goes, probably will get a better crop that's more marketable. All of those things can be an economic advantage for the farmer, but that big investment is a big discouragement. So you have this push-pull. And if you know, as a farmer, that your land is likely to sell for development sometime in the not-too-distant future, remember your average age is 57, you may not be inclined to make that investment. It might not make much sense. If you knew that land was always going to be in agriculture, your inclination to make that investment might be a great deal higher.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Don Stewart, author of the book Barnyards and Birkenstocks, Why Farmers and Environmentalists Need Each Other. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. You've alluded a bit to this already, but would you give a brief overview of the different strategies used to encourage more environmentally friendly farming?
Well, there actually are some great solutions to that problem, and that's one of the positives here. They do fall into sort of a regulatory slash incentive-based approach, which is a part of the crux of the difference between farmers and environmentalists. Clearly, getting strong zoning for agriculture helps keep land in agriculture. Clearly, you could regulate, and in many cases we do regulate agricultural practices. Those are on the involuntary regulatory side. But on the voluntary side, there are also a number of them. One of them, think about all of the programs, for example, in the Farm Bill conservation title. They have incentives, what in the industry is referred to as cost-share assistance. Our conservation districts and the Natural Resources Conservation Service help farmers, provide them with technical assistance, and help get them financial incentives that share the cost of implementing some of these practices, like, for example, perhaps an irrigation system. Then you have what I like to think of as conservation economics, what I just referred to with irrigation, that in many cases, these practices actually can work to the financial advantage of the farm operation. We need to maximize that. You have marketplace certifications, right? Here in the Northwest, for example, we have a program called Salmon Safe, where they certify farm as being salmon safe, as operating with good salmon habitat. You have other certifications like the Food Alliance certification, and there are others. Those help to provide a little market advantage. Obviously, purchasing development rights can protect land without using regulations and zoning. Environmental markets are one of my favorites. The idea that we take funding that's received from mitigation and offsets for other activities that are damaging to the environment, and we use that funding to actually cause farmers to produce environmental services or benefits using those tools that I referred to earlier, above and beyond what might be a sort of commonly accepted baseline, and to make up for some of that damage that we're causing. That's a tool that is still very, very underused. And I might add, there's one more: help our farmers be more economically viable. Just helping them be more successful in business can help them afford the land and continue in business and help them afford to do good, sound environmental practices.
In your book, you point out that farmers and environmentalists often work against each other. Why is this the case?
Well, they face a sort of paradox, something I became aware of when I worked for the conservation districts. We had these incentive programs we were trying to get funding for in the state legislature. So I thought, well, this will be easy. The farmers are going to love this. This is all voluntary, incentive-based. I'll get all kinds of help from the ag industry. And I thought, you know, the environmentalists, they're going to like this, right? Because after all, this is getting good conservation on the ground. I was convinced at the outset that I was going to be able to do this quite easily. Unfortunately, it didn't work that way. What I came to discover was that for the farmers, they're desperately fearful of regulation. And I think to some extent, their fear is well-grounded. I feel that it's very difficult to regulate this industry both fairly and with moderation. And they know that. I mean, they sense that. And they're fearful of regulations. They fight against the regulations. And in that fight, they have to argue that not just that regulations are a bad idea, but also that there is no need for them, right? There's no problem. So if they go in and say to a bunch of legislators, well, we'd like to have a lot of support, lots of funding for these incentive programs, a lot of those legislators are going to say, well, shoot, it sounds to me like you're saying there's a problem here. And, you know, maybe we do need those regulations. And conversely, farmers, all I ever got out of the farm industry was really, forgive me, but it was pretty lukewarm support. They liked the idea, but it was pretty moderate, lukewarm support. And I think it's understandable because that wasn't their priority. And they were very concerned about what was their priority, which was avoiding regulation. Conversely, for the environmentalist, this is life and death. This is human life on this planet. We're talking about the environment. If the environment goes haywire, we all lose in a very, very big way. They're not messing around, right? I mean, they're serious about what is a serious human problem. These are not to be ignored. So they want something for sure. They want this problem solved. They want things that can be measured. So for them, it's got to be regulation. Every industry they ever tried to deal with or to regulate always said, well, let's just do this voluntarily with incentives. And for them, this is just kind of more of the same. So they want regulations and they want it to be serious. The problem is for them to go in and say, well, we'd like to fund these incentive programs, they are going to have legislators that look at them and say, well, shoot, it sounds to me like we don't really need those regulations. You want to fund these incentive programs, maybe we'll just do that and that's all that will be necessary. So on both sides, to fight for incentives really undermined their position on regulations, and it was very difficult for them to do. In the end, we would walk away with our programs funded, but only at sort of a very, very modest level, way less than what was necessary. And that phenomenon, that paradox that they both face, I think runs through agriculture in every state in the country and definitely at the federal level.
To what extent have alliances between farmers and environmentalists taken place?
That's many times. And in fact, that's really the hopeful thing about all this. Usually it happens at the local level. One of the best examples, I think, happened right here in the state of Washington with what was referred to or has been our Ruckelshaus process. You may be familiar with it. The Ruckelshaus Center is an effort that's a joint Washington State University, University of Washington program. The legislature basically committed in advance that if farmers and environmentalists could get together to solve some of the salmon habitat problems that we face, they would stay the further action under our growth management laws, critical areas ordinances. And they did. That was actually stayed initially, I think, for 2 years, and then they extended it for another to give our farmers a chance and our environmentalists a chance to sit down and come up with a solution. And the hopeful thing is that they did. They did exactly that. They actually designed a very, I think, a clever, elegant program, a conservation program that was optional for the various counties, but that some of our counties opted into that would target solutions to the problem. And here you had farmers and environmentalists agree, and as long as that is on track and standards and measures that are agreed to are met, they continue to avoid then the further implementation of the critical areas ordinances. I think it was a great solution, but it involved a legislature taking some risk, stepping forward and saying, if you guys agree to something, we will implement it. I would add, it isn't just Washington, too. This has happened in various contexts, in various states, and in various places around the country. It certainly doesn't seem to affect things at the federal level. And even locally, it doesn't seem to get folks to back off of these difficult positions with respect to regulations and incentives.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Don Stewart, author of the book Barnyards and Birkenstocks, Why Farmers and Environmentalists Need Each Other. What do most successful collaborations between farmers and environmentalists have in common?
I could list them. Let's start at the beginning. The beginning is they have to be motivated to act. So, like most other negotiations, there has to be a motive to negotiate. I would say that for the environmentalists, they have to feel that they are not getting what they need. And for farmers, they have to feel at risk. And I think they do, for the most part. But both sides have to feel at risk. But that's only half. They also have to feel that there's a likelihood of success, or at least a possibility, a reasonable possibility of success, that they will gain something, not just be negotiating away gains that they've already made or positions that they find very difficult to give up on. But they also have to appreciate or have hope that the thing will lead to something good. To me, that is one of the reasons the Ruckelshaus process was successful, and it tells us what we can do, because in effect, what has to happen, ultimately, we have to get them talking, and there are various strategies for accomplishing that, I feel, but even just getting them talking isn't enough. If they don't approach this in a sufficiently formal way and constructive way, and if they don't have something to gain, and that's the role of, I think, of government. That's where the policy community can come into this, to provide advance commitments that we're going to fund and continue this process from start to finish. We're not just going to start in and make you show up and talk about it and have it not go anywhere. It's got to be committed to that if there's an outcome, if you guys agree on something, we'll fund it. We'll implement it. We'll do it. You come up with a solution, we'll find a way to act on that solution. If farmers and environmentalists can see that that's in the air, that that's a genuine possibility, I think they will absolutely come to the table. And as I say, they have on multiple occasions. So a commitment to the process by the policy community, I think a commitment to the process by agriculture and environmentalists, something to lose, and something definitely to gain, a commitment to actually follow through if they've come up with answers.
In your view, what are the best approaches to addressing environmental concerns in farmland preservation together? You mentioned earlier a number of different approaches, but which ones seem most promising?
Obviously, as a former staffer for American Farmland Trust, I am very fond of purchase and development rights. I think there is, in the land protection side of this equation, and I think that there is also a definite role for zoning and growth management. It needs to be moderate and consistent and reliable, but there's absolutely got to be a role for that. But these other elements that I listed for you, the other things like certification programs in the marketplace, conservation economics, the conservation incentives programs, environmental markets, economic viability, all of those things are critical pieces. For me, however, none of them, not one of any of those things I just mentioned, top to bottom, voluntary and involuntary, not one of them can solve this problem alone. And in fact, maybe the key thing is that we need, if not all, We need as many of them as it's humanly possible to use, because if you don't do it that way, you end up sacrificing the fairness that is essential to this process. No one's going to support a solution if it doesn't seem fair. Farmers are like all the rest of us. They don't want to be a patsy. They don't want to be out there solving problems that someone else caused. Some of these incentive-based things put more burden on consumers. Some put more burden on the public. Some put more of a burden on farmers. And if you really want to solve the problem, you actually need to put some burden on all of those components of our society, and it needs to be allocated in some sort of fair and reasonable way so that everyone feels that, yeah, I'm doing my part, but I'm not having to do more than what's fair. So that's why I feel you need an array of solutions to the problem that touch each of those different segments of society, hopefully in proportion to the amount they contributed to the problem.
What most stands in the way of reducing loss of farms and damage to ecosystems?
Well, farms get lost for a very simple reason, right? It's because they're worth more for something else. And if you've got a piece of farmland that's worth, say you've got 100 acres, it's worth $300,000 or so as a farm business asset. In the same way that a business might buy a machine, they're going to calculate what that machine costs and how much they're going to get out of it in terms of productivity. That's going to define how much they can afford to spend on it. That $300,000 is a business expense. At, say, 5% interest, what is that, $15,000 a year that it costs to have that invested in that land? So the farmer's got to make enough money off that 100 acres to be able to pay labor and seed and all of the other costs of operating and cover that investment carrying cost. If that 100 acres suddenly is worth not $300,000, but some developer comes along is ready to spend $1.5 million, then that carrying cost isn't $15,000 a year. Suddenly it's gone up to $75,000 a year. And suddenly operating a farm at this location just isn't profitable. It doesn't make any economic sense. So having purchase of development rights programs or having zoning programs that keep land cost and land value down to what a farm business can afford to own and support with the profits that you can earn from it. That's the key fundamental background. That's the reason we lose the land, and that's the thing we've got to correct if we're going to save that land. On the environmental side, mostly I feel it's all of those things I've mentioned. The barriers that stand in the way are, let's just say, at least many, a great many of these practices are just a little too costly for a farmer to be able to afford to do on his own without some help. Maybe some of them we should have the farmer doing on their own without help, but for a great many of them, maybe not. Maybe they should have some assistance with that. Maybe they're solving problems that all of us contribute to. So I would say in both cases, it's economics that's at play, and in both cases, it's a problem we can solve.
Would you underscore why farmers and environmentalists need each other?
Well, yes. I feel it goes back to what I said at the outset, that if we're all going to survive, we need a sustainable, clean, healthy environment, and we need economically viable farms. Those two things have to go hand in hand, and in effect, they have to go side by side, right? I mean, 50%, as I said, of the land is in agriculture. These things are interspersed with each other. These environmental values and the food values, the farm values, arise out of the same square foot of earth, out of the same ground in many cases, or if not right on top of one another, if not together in that way, at least side by side on the same land. It's critical if we're going to have those two things, both farms and a clean environment, if we're going to have both of those, because these farms and our environment are so interspersed and intermixed and so related in so many ways to one another, both politically and physically on the ground, it's absolutely essential that farmers and environmentalists work together. If they don't, getting that accomplished is going to be incredibly difficult for the rest of us. I'm just thoroughly convinced that it is very much in the best interests of both farmers and environmentalists to cooperate. I think they would both come out way better if they would cooperate. I think farmers would be hugely supported by a farm-friendly environmental community that saw, appreciated, and supported agriculture. And conversely, the environment would be hugely better if farmers were actively engaged and positively engaged in helping the environment. Those two things together would greatly improve both agriculture and the environment, would make it possible for them to coexist, as we've discussed. And I think that's where it's at. I mean, I'm absolutely convinced it would dramatically change the political landscape for agriculture and for the environment.
What do you predict for the future?
I kind of have two visions about that. I feel like, on the one hand, we could just go along the way we are. This farm environmental conundrum, this paradox we talked about, is actually kind of just a further play out of what we face with our red-blue liberal-conservative divisions in this country, where the cultural and geographic separations are having such impact. We could continue down that road. I think if we do, the consequences are really rather dire. I think it will be a sad, slow erosion of both agriculture and the environment. On the other hand, if we can go in the other direction, if we can see our farms and the environment both as sustaining, both as necessary, understand and care that they both flourish, then I think agriculture and a healthy environment can be absolutely coexisting and enduring feature of the American landscape.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I'd say that's it. I would say that I feel like it's very important, critically important to all of us, to our future, that farmers and environmentalists work together. We're talking about massive portions of American lands, and that if we could get this kind of cooperation, we'd have huge benefits for both agriculture and the environment. But I might add, I also think that if we could get that kind of cooperation with agriculture and with the environment, we would actually undercut the current stalemate that we have in American politics in a surprising way. I think the sort of surprising nature of that coalition, reaching as it does into rural conservative communities and into urban liberal ones at the same time, I think that farmers and environmentalists, a coalition of these people, could be hugely powerful, could get amazing things done. I think we'd all be quite startled by it, and I think it could be a model for how the rest of us address some of these problems in the years to come.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Don.
Absolutely.
You are just listening to Don Stewart, author of the book Barnyards and Birkenstocks, Why Farmers and Environmentalists Need Each Other, published in 2014 by Washington State University Press. For more information, check on the web at donstewart.net. Again, that's donstewart.net. And you are invited to join Don Tuesday, November 18th at Town Hall, Seattle, where he will speak about his book from 7:30 to 9 p.m. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.